It's late night with Hancock and Kelly, but guess who's not here? Hancock. He's not here. He's on one of those numerous vacations that he has to go on to all the time. So sitting in for John Hancock tonight is none other than Braxton Payne. You know him from What's Trending. You've heard him with us before. And as we do every time Hancock and Kelly are together, in studio is joining us Sean Michael Wiles. How are you, Sean?
I'm doing fine. How are you?
I'm doing great. And I understand you are we know so much about you,
yeah,
Sean,
yeah,
and we like to learn so much about you. You have a tie to soccer.
Mm-hmm.
You were a soccer referee?
No.
Oh, boy. I mean, me and soccer go way back. I saw my first soccer game. Boy, let's put it this way. I've seen professional soccer in the United States probably longer than most anybody else.
Tell me why.
I guess I have to date myself. My first professional soccer team was the Oakland Clippers. I saw at the Coliseum in 1967.
Wow.
And I've been watching pro soccer ever since. I grew up in San Jose, California, where the San Jose Earthquakes.
Mm-hmm.
I was at the very first game, May 11, 1974. They have a little museum for the team at their soccer stadium, and they got a ticket stub from their very first game. That's my ticket stub.
You
That's
gave awesome. It to them.
Yeah, I gave it to them. I used to cover earthquake soccer. I was in that was one of part of my beat in San Jose as a news reporter. And so, yeah, I've covered soccer. I saw Pelé play a couple times.
Really?
You know, when I was a kid, he came to Spartan Stadium in San Jose and played. And, yeah, so I refereed. I played. It was kind of the thing when I grew up.
You had the earthquake as a part of your beat.
Yeah, San Jose. I was a credentialed Major League Soccer news
sports reporter.
Yeah, yeah, I was.
And so you'd have to interview the players stuff.
I asked David Beckham when he came to the United States. I said, after he had already played a couple of games, I said, "So what do you think about this brawl of American soccer?" And he said, "Well," he tried to make nice about it, but then he said, "Yeah, it's a brawl." He said, "I'm from, you know, London, the Cockney Bells, basically." And said, "So, but yeah, it's." It's a brawl.
Was he the most famous person you interviewed as it related to soccer?
Well, for people that we would know, yeah.
Yeah? Who was your favorite soccer person, too?
Well, there was this guy that it was kind of interesting. You'd have to know Major League Soccer a little bit. But there was this guy who his father was a season ticket holder, and I used to always enjoy talking to the new people and the people that players that nobody knew.
Right.
And so there was this guy who was from the Bay Area. His father had a season ticket in the beer garden in the corner of the stadium.
Right.
And so sure enough, the Houston Dynamo no longer needed him. So they shipped him out to San Jose so he could be near his hometown because he wasn't working out very well. And so I interviewed him, and I would talk to him every week, but I did it more as a human interest that this is a guy from the Bay Area.
Uh-huh.
His dad's a season ticket holder and all that. And his name is Chris Wondolowski.
Okay.
Oh, yeah.
And he ended up being the all-time leading scorer in MLS history.
He was a big deal. When I was growing up, he was huge.
But he was nothing until he went to San Jose.
And, well, hello. On his way to San Jose, who doesn't do well in San Jose, right?
Pretty much everybody else, actually.
Yeah. Well, you were telling me a story about the stadium and how they built it the other week.
Oh,
and I thought that was so fascinating.
The new stadium.
Yeah,
yeah, because when I was covering them, they were playing in the old Santa Clara University.
Yeah.
They don't even play football there, but they have this old Buckshaw Stadium. That's where they're playing, and they were trying to get this stadium built. And the owner, Lou Wolf, the owner of the San Jose Earthquakes, he was telling me about the trouble he was getting having his stadium built. And I said, "Well, I'll tell you what. When you build your stadium, make it out of steel and not this concrete." And he gives me this funny look in steel. Why make the stadium out of steel? And I said, "Well, because it's a soccer stadium in the United States." "Uh-huh. Yeah, so? Well, you never know if it's going to work out. So when it doesn't work out and you've got this soccer stadium and the league folds and collapses and your team is gone, you're going to have this soccer stadium and nothing to do with it. So rather than paying $5 to $10 million to have it demolished, if you make it out of steel, you can find salvagers who will give you $2 to $5 million to haul it off. It happened with like Tiger Stadium with Bloomington, Minnesota. Yeah. It had just happened with Shea Stadium in New York. Right. And I said, they'll pay you money to haul your stadium off as salvage. And he goes, really? And so after that, before he got his stadium built, I moved on to greener pastures, other places. Uh-huh. And then a few years later, I actually went back to the stadium once it was built. And I hadn't seen it. I hadn't seen them building it. And I go there and I show up and it's made of steel.
Let me ask you this. How did he take the fact that you were essentially explaining that his business model is probably going to collapse?
I didn't say
it was
probably.
And then all the money that he's investing in a stadium, he better be thinking of what his next plan is.
Oh, I didn't say it was probably going to collapse, but I pointed out that the San Jose earthquakes,
they
were a huge deal. I mean, we'd fit 25,000 fans in an 18,000-seat little rinkety wooden and dirt stadium to watch people like Pelé and Giorgio Canalia and Eusebio and some of the greatest players. George Best played for San Jose. Some of the greatest players of history were there. And so it was huge. Uh-huh. But then it faded to almost nothing. And, you know, the professional soccer all but disappeared in the United States. And then it came back again. And so it can come and it can go. And so, you know, I let him know that just because it's hot down doesn't mean it's going
to
stay.
Yeah, did you
way.
Talk to Carolyn Kendall Betts when she was starting to build her stadium here, make sure she built it with steel?
No, I talked to her a little bit, but she had already had the stadium designed. Yeah.
And what do you think of the name The City?
The city, well, that's what I call Euro wannabes. And that's what a lot of soccer fans are, is that they want to be European soccer. They're right. wannabes. My brother, for example, he won't go to Major League Soccer games because he's such a soccer snob.
He's a snob.
It's like you see them in their Chelsea jerseys and their Manchester. But have you ever seen them play in Chelsea?
No, I would like to go there.
My brother has. He travels the world to see
Did they build their stadium in steel?
No, they didn't, but they didn't need to because it's going to stay around no matter what.
No kidding, right?
And to be honest, San Jose, after they built their stadium, they've never filled it.
Mm-mm.
Really?
No, most of these new stadiums, Columbus is a good example. Columbus, you know, they built the first soccer-specific stadium. Uh-huh. They never filled it. And then when they were going to leave and go to Austin, Texas, which ended up getting an expansion, when they were going to leave, they had these people step in. We'll buy it. We'll buy the team. We'll build a new stadium. They bought the team. They built a new stadium. They still don't fill it.
Huh. I think we'll fill the stadium here.
Oh, here, yes, absolutely. Yeah,
not much else to do.
Yeah, I think here is definitely a different situation. I mean, I've been to probably 20, 30 MLS games throughout you know, my whole life. And I remember going to Chicago Fire games at Soldiers Field and then Arrowhead and going to the Kansas City Wizards before they were Sporting KC. And it was just, you know, you're playing in a football stadium and it's quarter filled even with the seats that they have. And one of the things that I thought was interesting is when Chicago, they built a soccer, you know, specific stadium in Bridgeview, which is, you know, 30 minutes south of the city. And I went to a couple games there. Nobody there because it's not in the downtown area of Chicago. Yeah. It's not really easy to get to Bridgeview. Yeah. It's like you take Highway 55 and it's another 25 minutes, 30 minutes off the highway. I think here it'll be a lot different because we are right downtown, which can draw people from both sides of the river. And there's more to do around it.
I think it's the community itself. For example, you know, Minnesota has a fabulous stadium.
Yeah. That's where Hancock is today, Minnesota.
Yeah, and they show up at first, but not so much afterwards. Cincinnati's another one. Showed up great at first, but it's fading. And Kansas City, you know, when they built their new stadium and rebranded as Sporting KC, it was great, but it's fading.
Yeah, it's out in the middle of nowhere, too.
Well, yeah, there's that. But the fact is that they had the support, and it's kind of fading. Now, being somebody who was original North American Soccer League, San Jose Earthquakes, Portland Timbers are still going strong. Now, you talk about, like, you know, these big giant NFL stadiums, Seattle Sounders. They played a big giant NFL stadium, and they are going gangbusters.
All right, before this segment ends, I call him Pelé, you call him
Pelé.
And
Edson Arantes do Nascimento. That's his name.
Okay. So Pelé played for San Jose?
No. He played for the New York Cosmos.
Okay.
And the New York Cosmos played in San Jose. So there I was behind Spartan Stadium where they had the practice field. And we're out there kicking the soccer ball before the game, and all of a sudden these people show up. They're handing out Pepsi T-shirts, and they're handing them out to all these kids. And here comes Pelé wearing his Pepsi T-shirt, and he plays soccer with us kids.
How about that?
Yep.
That's cool. Dead or alive, Pelé?
He was alive at the time. He still is.
He's still alive to this day?
Oh, yeah.
How about that?
Yeah, and if you saw his old girlfriend, Shusha, boy, that'll keep you alive.
Hey, you're going to get me in trouble. I don't have Hancock to regulate us. That's Sean Michael Isle. You got to love him. He's with you all night long here on KMOX. Braxton Payne and I are going to take you all the way to 10 o'clock. Stick around, won't you? That's Braxton Payne over there. I'm Michael Kelly. It's the Hancock and Kelly Show, minus Hancock. He's out of town on one of his vacations. What else would you expect from him? He's rarely here, as I like to point out. And on Thursday, I've got to go to a meeting.
Braxton would be my name.
Yeah.
Yep.
I've got to go to a meeting that I actually have to get dressed up for.
Oh, Lord.
And it occurred to me that I really haven't gotten dressed up for anything.
No, I mean, obviously with the pandemic, but even prior to the pandemic, I feel like everything's kind of been
loose. What is acceptable dress? I'm going to speak at a luncheon on Thursday.
Okay.
So I'm going to have to be there. I normally, prior to the pandemic, this would have been khakis, a button-up shirt, and a blazer. I would assume I still have khakis somewhere in my closet.
Right.
I know the blazer I have because I wear it.
What's the type of location?
It's just a speaking thing.
So is it like at like an office or is it at like a country club or something?
So I got to get dressed up, but I mean, I wouldn't be surprised if some of the people who are coming to the event wouldn't be wearing shorts or jeans.
Yeah, well,
it's going to be 100 and something degrees.
Well, and that's another thing. It's just like I feel like you should, take in account the weather when you're dressing. I mean, I think now, for guys, I think like a khaki shorts and a golf polo is fine about 80% of the time now.
Even in a meeting, in an office setting.
I mean, I think so.
Khaki shorts.
No. Not
you must have a great boss.
Not khaki shorts. I said khaki pants.
Okay.
But like, I mean, I went to a meeting the other day and I was not underdressed. I mean, we were in a conference room in a strip mall in the back room. I mean, and I wore shorts.
Drug deal, huh?
I wore shorts and a golf polo. And everyone else was wearing, normal, what I would consider pre-COVID dress clothes. And I was like, well, I didn't realize it's 105 degrees outside. I'm not wearing pants and a suit jacket. That's
but
just
I wore
ridiculous.
I wore shorts tonight to the office.
Yeah,
I don't think
now.
I, prior to the pandemic, ever would have worn shorts to KMOX. And prior to the pandemic, would have never have worn jeans. I was always wearing slacks.
Really? To KMOX.
To KMOX. And now I think jeans are acceptable office attire for almost any place, aren't they?
I think so. I mean, KMOX had a dress code before COVID too, I think, at some point.
I don't think they ever had a dress code. I think it just was an unwritten rule that you showed respect and
I think now, so there's so many people that work from home, right? So obviously you can wear whatever you want from home. There's not really many rules on that. But then when you come into the office, I know friends that work for Fortune 500 companies, right here in St. Louis, and their dress codes are, just as long as it's no shorts usually is the only rule. And whatever type top you want to wear is fine.
I think the no shorts thing is discriminatory against men, though, because women can wear a nice little sundress and they can get the coolness of not having pants on.
Right.
But we aren't allowed to wear shorts.
Yeah. I mean, I would not want to be a woman in the workplace because I feel like what they have to wear in general is much more than we have to try. And
you had to take it there, didn't you? Well, here I was trying to lobby for men, I'm just saying. I'm with you on all that, by the way.
But the thing is, I think, too, for example, I had a Zoom meeting today, and I wore exactly what I have on now, which is a pair of shorts, a golf polo, and a hat.
You think it's appropriate to be wearing a hat when you're having a Zoom meeting?
I think on Zoom meetings, depending on who it is, I think if you're at home, or if it's just, more casual, I mean, I don't think that's a problem, really.
PJ, if you were pitching for a client or you were doing something, you had a Zoom meeting, would you wear a hat?
No, probably not.
Yeah,
sorry.
Yeah. Well, it's interesting. I'm not being critical of it during the pandemic, Hancock and I were doing the TV show from our house. So we were Zooming the television show, if you will. And I was wearing literally my boxers.
Yeah.
I would put on a button up and a tie, a blazer, and my boxers, and I would sit there for 30 minutes and do the show.
Yeah.
I loved it. And ever since then, I don't even bother putting the rest of the suit on. I just put a pair of jeans on. And I go in and because they shoot me from the waist up. And by the way, I'm not there to look pretty.
I mean, when I subbed in for you, that's exactly what I did. I wore jeans and a button down and a tie and a suit jacket. But I wasn't about to wear a full blown suit just for fun. Especially you gotta get dry cleaned then, and it's just expensive. I mean, who wants to do that?
I still go to the dry cleaner.
Same.
And I feel like the place is full all the time.
Yeah. I mean, a lot of people now though do get more than just suits dry cleaned. I mean, there's a lot of people that get their normal clothes, you know, their button downs, their pants dry cleaned on a regular basis.
I always do my pants and my button downs. I never do jeans, anything like that. Linen for sure, I take to the dry cleaners.
Yeah.
Do you?
Linens? No. I mean, I only have one pair. I don't really wear them that often.
Even as a shirt. You don't wear a linen shirt like I do.
No, not
so much. I like
it.
It's just so.
I don't sweat, you know,
it's
really.
Nice.
I have,
you know, you can be loose. It's like you're wearing your pajamas.
Yeah, I mean, I just don't really sweat that much. So
you don't?
No, I've been beneficial of that in my life. It's never been a problem.
Who
for
was
me.
That prince that was married to Fergie? Prince Andrew, isn't that his name?
Yeah, the one that's in.
Yeah, the one that is all
is
caught
a sex
up in the
trafficker.
Epstein. Yeah, and he said that he doesn't sweat. That he has some.
He probably has
disease.
Both. Oh yeah,
come
he probably
on.
Has
how,
one of those.
Who doesn't sweat? How would you be alive as a human if your body wasn't emitting moisture?
I mean, I know a lot of celebrities, though, that get Botox underneath their arms and on their face, and it's not to make sure that they, you know, have no wrinkles. It's to so they don't sweat. I mean, I know a lot of people.
What does Botox have to do with sweating?
Oh, yeah. I have friends that have excessive sweat glands that they get Botox. No joke. They get Botox under their armpits on a regular basis so they don't sweat as much.
They get needles stuck into their armpits?
Oh, yeah. It's a
just
totally
so they won't have
thing.
The embarrassment of having sweat?
Well, sometimes. I mean, two of my friends have like excessive. Like, I mean, like it could be they could be in Siberia
that
and
sounds
still
like
be
they
sweating.
Have a ton of money. If you can go and get Botox
it's
in your
covered under armpits.
First of all, taking a
insurance.
Needle to your armpit
it's covered
is,
under insurance.
Are you kidding
I
me?
I swear to you, it's covered under insurance.
We are dying as a society if Botox to stop sweating is now getting. I get it. There's going to be those unique circumstances of the one freak who was born who sweats 12 pounds of sweat in 2 hours and will die if we don't figure something out. But just some cosmetic dude going to get Botox under his armpits?
Well, then I'm going to really blow your mind because
You've done it.
So No. So I'm in my early 30s, right? Okay. And I have friends that have been getting Botox since the time they're 26. So it's called preventative Botox. So actually, if you really want to use Botox correctly, you don't get it later in life because it makes your skin look like it's too dragged. So what they do is you get preventative Botox, which is just like light shots. In the normal spots in like your temple. And what happens is like over time your muscles don't get too stretched out. So you look
become
younger.
A piece of plastic.
No, so you look younger. It's essentially microdosing of Botox. But I have friends that go once a month to get little microdoses of Botox since the age of 26 years old.
What is Botox? Is it plastic that gets injected into your body?
No, it's like
it's a liquid?
Yeah, it's a liquid.
It's like a filler.
No, it's not a filler either. I don't know. I mean, I'm not a doctor, so I don't want to give medical advice.
And you have young people who've been getting Botox their whole lives. That's the kind of stuff that people do when they're 50 and 60.
But infants and stuff can now get Botox for preventative treatments and stuff like that for different types of diseases. It's used just more now than for just cosmetics. They found out that there's many more benefits to Botox than just, you know, looking
better.
When
do we find out that Botox will kill you?
I mean,
because it's inevitable, right? Coffee will kill you. Red wine will kill you.
Well, yeah, I mean,
breathing will kill you.
Yes.
I mean, out everything's going to kill us. When are we going to finally say, look, all the insurance companies are paying for all you people to get Botox in your armpits so you don't sweat, and now you're going to die from it?
Apparently, I mean, it's become so. I can name rattle off people that use Botox for different reasons. And
have you ever had Botox?
5-6 years? No, I've thought about it.
Where would you get it?
Oh, it's easy. All you do is call one of
these. No, but where would you put it on your body?
Oh, right here, crow's feet.
Your crow's feet?
Yeah.
I
don't wear it. So, fun fact about me, I've never owned a pair of sunglasses in my life.
Really?
Yeah, so I don't wear sunglasses. So, I, you know, squint a little bit more than the normal person. I don't like sunglasses. I don't know. Just never have. And so, I've never owned a pair. Don't wear them. And I'm used to it now.
Have you considered, if you went in and started getting your crow's feet fixed, would you be like, hey, why don't you do a little to my armpits here? I've been sweating lately.
So, I mean, I don't really sweat that much.
You have to sweat.
Barely. I really don't.
When you played volleyball, you were a world-class athlete. You played Division I volleyball. How did you not sweat?
Yeah, I just didn't. I really, honestly, I really did not sweat that much.
You're not working hard enough.
Yeah. Oh, okay. He's probably not wrong.
You can't be exercising and not sweating. All right, we're gonna get some Botox. We'll be back after this.
Wasting away again.
Ah, yes, the Hancock and Kelly show. Without Hancock, he's on one of his long waited for vacations.
Sunny, I'm sure.
Braxton Payne was kind enough to come in and pinch it. But wait till you hear this. Matt Pajeski pulled off the ultimate guest. They've pulled him off of the beach. And joining us now here on the celebrity guest line at KMOX is none other than John Hancock Sr. Hey, John, how's the weather?
It's fine, Michael. It's the same weather you have. I'm sitting in my kitchen because I was on a work trip. Not a vacation. You have been not telling the truth to your many dozens of listeners out there.
I think I may have already told them that you were in Minneapolis and you were doing some work, but it sounds so much better to jab at you for being on vacation, because I noticed this morning, or when I was watching the television show from Sunday that I was unable to join, that Andy Banker hadn't even gotten finished introducing us, and you're like, guess who's not here? He's on another trip. Guess who's not here?
Well, you actually were on another trip. I, however, was posing in front of the Mary Tyler Moore statue in downtown Minneapolis.
What's bigger, you or the statue?
Much bigger, the statue.
The statue is much bigger?
Quite a tribute.
How was the weather in Minneapolis?
So yesterday it was 99 degrees, jeez, ridiculously hot. Today it was overcast, about 85, not too bad. But here's the stupidest thing maybe that I have ever done, Michael.
Oh, this is a long list here. We got to compare against.
So I'm staying at the hotel.
Okay.
I've got this meeting. It's a client meeting.
Uh-huh.
And I've got the address for the client meeting, and I look at the address of the client meeting, and I look at the address of my hotel, and I think, oh, man, this is like 40 blocks away. So I get up really early, get showered and da-da-da. I got coffee.
Uh-huh.
I called the Uber.
Yeah.
And the Uber is 6 minutes away. I'm thinking, oh, man, I can't be late to this meeting. So finally, the Uber pulls up. I hop in, and he says, really?
Oh, my God.
And I said, yeah. He said, really? And I said, yeah, I got to get to this meeting on time. And he points, and he says, the meeting is in that building.
Same building.
Literally across the street.
Across the street from where you're sitting.
It was a 38-cent Uber ride. And it's so... I got out of the Uber, I looked back, and there's my hotel. Perhaps the dumbest thing I've ever done.
Well, John,
you're not known for your directions, no. That's for sure.
You know, one day, Pajeski and Braxton, so listen to this. So one day, Hancock and I are doing the show here, and he says, hey, I've got to go by the courthouse after this is over with. And I said, which one? He goes, the municipal courthouse. I said, well, John, right there is the municipal courthouse. We were standing out in the parking lot, and I said, it's right there, and it's across the street. And he says, do you mind driving me over there? I said, what? He goes, well, I got to cross the street, and it's busy, and, you know, it's downtown St. Louis. Somebody may hit me.
Yeah, people die walking across that street.
They do. They do. So what did you do? Did you whip, get in your pocket and give the guy an extra $5? Because you kind of ruined his day, too, the Uber guy.
I gave him the maximum tip possible for $2. A 38-cent Uber ride.
Yeah, $2.
Yeah, it was $5, Michael. Uh-huh. And so I really felt silly. But I got to the meeting on time. So,
all right, let's catch up on a couple of things. I have been to almost every city in the United States. I did that during the presidential campaign. Have never been to Minneapolis. What's your read on that city?
city.
Well, the downtown is remarkably like St. Louis. It's pretty dead. Mm-hmm. Not a lot of foot traffic. The panhandlers there. So every time I would step out the door, there would be a panhandler. I mean, every single time. Without, it didn't matter. Morning, noon, night, didn't matter. The difference is that at least in St. Louis, the panhandlers will take Venmo. And I was not given a Venmo option in Minneapolis. So they're not quite up to the level of our own good people in St. Louis.
Wow. So pretty dead downtown.
Pretty dead. And I was right in the middle. I mean, I'm right down the street from the Target, you know, world headquarters and, you know, right in the middle of everything.
Wow.
It was a half a block from my big meeting in the big office building.
I came back from New York yesterday, and the whole world was screwed up because of this heat and storms that were taking place on the East Coast. Did you experience some delays as a result of it?
No, it was hot yesterday, 99, and I didn't know whether to wear a sport coat or a suit. You know, it's a fairly new client for me.
Right.
And so I kind of went halfway with a sport coat and no tie.
Yeah.
And it was so hot. And we had dinner last night. Oh. So it was one of these frou-frou restaurants. It was a pan-Moroccan French.
Right, which means you're getting very small portions.
Yeah, of something I've never recognized in my life. And I'm sitting there, and literally, there's an 801 chop house across the street.
Right.
There, you know, I mean, there's this steakhouse that's unique to Minneapolis. No. We went to whatever it was called, Ferrazzo's, or I don't know what it was.
Yep.
And, I mean, I hope the client's not listening. But
yeah, you got like three morsels of food, and you're still hungry when you left dinner.
Yeah, and one of the courses, fancy courses, was a little brown paper bag full of French fries. And I'm thinking, you know, I could go to McDonald's.
Yeah,
for the French fry. You know, it was. So I was a little underwhelmed with dinner last night.
So there you are, starving in your suit, sweating, and miserable. I don't know about you, but every city I go to, the panhandlers all seem to know my name, and it's unique throughout the country. It doesn't matter what city I'm in. It's, hey big guy, hey big guy. Do you get that one? Hey big guy.
No, I was sir.
Sir.
I was sir.
Yeah.
It's the no hair.
And I had one candle. One guy came by and said, good morning, sir. And I said, good morning. And he said, you should call me sir. I said, good morning, sir. And he said, let me ask you, sir, do you have $2? And I said, no, sir. I've left my wallet in the room, sir. And he said, well, I'm sorry to hear that, sir. Have a good day. And I said, you have a good day, sir. And that was my exchange.
How about that? You got a little lesson in etiquette from a panhandler who didn't that you were referring to him as anything other than sir.
Yeah, very polite. Yeah, very polite. So let that be a lesson to all of us as we encounter our fellow man on the on the streets.
I am very sorry for putting out some false information. I thought you were going to Minneapolis to experience the climate.
Sit on the Mississippi River, maybe, in a swimsuit. Yeah.
And the Mississippi, by the way, the Mississippi is very skinny in Minneapolis.
Yeah.
Not nearly as breathtaking as it is in our own town.
So you couldn't walk up to her and say, hey, big gal.
Yeah, no, very, very thin, and but they have done. I will say this because I did take a walk. You won't believe this, but I took a walk.
Well, I'm proud of you. No dog either, huh?
Yeah, and they've done a lot with their riverfront. You know, that could be a lesson for all of us.
Do you think that the panhandlers looked at you and were like, "Oh, this is a tourist here. He doesn't belong.
Yeah,
this is definitely somebody we want to hit up for money. Hey, big guy, you got $2?" Sir?
All the other people walking down the streets were wearing, you know, Birkenstocks and shorts, and they had tattoos on their neck. And they look at me and they say, this guy is not from here. He's here because he's making money. Let's get him.
Are you going to be in studio with me on Friday, or are you chasing another client, or are you going on vacation?
No, buddy. I will. I'll be with you that day, and perhaps. Oh, have you failed to mention Peter?
Oh, Braxton, as you know, John and I spent a little time together playing snooker.
Yes.
And last week we had a little time to play snooker, and it was a man from China. I don't think his real name was Peter, by the way.
Yes.
Mm-hmm. He took a liking to John. He came over and said, "Hello, sir. would you like to play snooker?" And John, why don't you tell everybody what happened?
Well, Peter had his own cue. It was a one-piece $1,500 snooker cue, beautiful cue. And we started playing, and he was quite good. He had a 29 break right off the bat, and I thought, there's no way. I mean, this guy's way better than I'll ever be. And we kept playing, and I was playing a strategic game, you might say.
Uh-huh.
And then tell the people what happened next, Michael.
Well, John wound up winning, and Peter, in a little bit of a broken English, walked over to him and said something along the lines of, "I have never lost on this table, and I've been coming here for 10 years.
Oh, wow. Is this the same place you guys go out in West County?
Yeah.
Oh, yeah, wow. The Galleon.
And the guy then walked out with his cane. He was blind. And John beat him. John did beat him, and Peter, which I don't think Peter's real name was Peter. With his one, and by the way, his one-piece cue, I'm there too. He didn't even want to play me in a game, and he offers, "John, would you like to use my cue?" And I'm thinking, well, I'm going to get offered the cue. He just turned his head back and walked away from me, never offered it to me. I have a way with folks, huh? Buddy, I miss you. Indeed. I'm so glad miss that I got too. Braxton in here doing stuff with me, and I will see you on Friday.
All right. Hey, take care, guys. Good job.
Yep, that's John Hancock, and come back from vacation, kind enough to spend a couple minutes with us here on the Mighty Mox. We got one segment less. Stick around.
I have just two words for you.
Right now, it's Hancock and Kelly.
You two belong together.
On St. Louis's News Radio, KMOX.
A friend of mine was telling me they were at the Lake of the Ozarks this weekend, and the bill comes. They are at one of these pool bars, right? So they had pulled up their boat. They're hanging out at a pool bar. You know, they're drinking.
The beautiful Lake of the Ozarks.
The beautiful Lake of the Ozarks. And and now comes time for the bill. And the lady brings the bill out, and she said, "Oh, you're going to pay with a credit card?" Well, first of all, he's in his pool. Who takes their money into a pool?
Right.
You know, you're not going to take cash into a pool.
Uh-huh.
She goes, "Well, we automatically add 10% to the bill."
For
using a credit card.
For using a credit card.
Listen.
Now, did he hit like a minimum? Was it the reason? Okay.
No. They spent a considerable amount of money.
I'm sure.
Now, listen, I am a generous soul when it comes to tipping.
Well, yes. I can definitely vouch for that.
I totally believe in over tipping and taking care of people.
Yeah.
But when they put that kind of stuff on their own, it aggravates me. Because I feel like, oh, really? I look like the guy who's not going to tip you?
Right.
So you automatically put 20% on? Well, that screws you. I put that in my own head.
Right.
But now they're just putting 10% on because you're using a credit card.
Right.
That has to be illegal.
I don't think it is. But one of the things I think in the past, 10 years, 15 years, parties over six or more, you know, you always add 18%. I can understand that. It's more difficult, especially restaurants that are, you know, high volume. You're kind of taking up several tables. You know, I get that. I was in Memphis recently, which... If you can complain about St. Louis about being a dying city as much as you want, go to Memphis and you'll think St. Louis is the New York City of America.
Really,
it is a very much dying city. Beale Street was first time I was over there. I mean, it was dead. It was $20 just to get on the street, mind you, to get through the gates. And then you pay, you know.
Wait a minute, to be on the street?
To get on Beale Street? $20.
What do you get for that?
Nothing. Just to get on the street, you get a little wristband, and then you are able to walk on the street on Beale Street after, you know, 8, 9 o'clock at night.
That's crazy.
Yeah. So I was there. We were there for a weekend. We went to several different restaurants, went to a couple microbreweries and stuff on the outskirts. Every single place added a minimum tip on there. It was anywhere between 10 and 20%. And I will say the first time I didn't notice until I had already tipped an extra 25%.
Right.
And I've realized we just tipped 45% on a pretty bad service. So that was upsetting after we realized that. So then I looked at the things, and luckily I noticed the play. So it does irritate me.
Yeah.
You know, a little bit, but also the reason it wouldn't irritate me is if they were paying their employees like a living wage.
Right.
And if I don't, who knows? They're probably not. Was when the waitress came up and said, I just want to let you know the management adds 18% on top of this. It's not my decision. I'm just letting you know that's what management decided, which made me feel better.
Does that go to her?
Yes. And so I did specifically ask that question. So I feel like it can be approached in a way where it wouldn't irritate me as much. It would really irritate me if I decided to use a credit card, which everyone uses. Cash. I mean, right. I have one friend that I can think of that uses cash.
You're at a pool bar at the Lake of the
Ozarks.
Exactly. And I said to him, was that for the waitress? And she goes, he said, absolutely not. They have a sign, and apparently it's every bar now at the lake, that it's 10% if you use a credit card. So I get that credit cards charge a fee, right?
Right. It's just like
3%, 2.5%, whatever the heck it is.
To the merchant, yeah.
But guess what? You're the ones who chose to use credit cards, and if you want people to come there, you're going to have credit cards. Put that into your cost and pass it along to me. But just 10% because I used a credit card?
Yeah.
We live in this street or this state where all these Republicans want to talk about freedom. How come they're not passing laws about this stuff?
I don't understand. First off, it's the Lake of the Ozarks, which is not like it's the, you know, the world class of America. But what I don't understand is where does that 10% go? That's what I want to know. Does
in
it go
their
to
pocket.
Management or does it go to the staff? Is it a pooled tip situation? Because that would change my opinion a little bit if it was going to staff that was working.
What's it matter?
Well, because it would be a tip. But no. if the 10% goes to the management and then you have to tip 20% for your service, then that would irritate me because it's not going to.
Maybe I'm old fashioned, but
no,
just put
I'm
the price
you.
On the menu that you want to charge me. I get it. Maybe a hamburger is now gone from $10 to $15 to $20, which sounds crazy to me.
Right.
But it's even crazier to me is that you're going to give me a bill for $150 and put an extra 10% on just because I'm paying with a credit card.
Yeah, I don't.
Build that in there. Get your extra 10% when I look at your prices on the menu.
Yeah, and I know a lot of places. That I live in the city of St. Louis, as you do. As I've seen the prices of certain things go up at my favorite places. I mean.
Uh-huh.
Chicken wings is
right.
The one thing that I've noticed gone up, you know, $4 because it is tougher to get them. But I don't know. I remember there was about 5 or 6 years ago, there was this fancy restaurant in LA that moved away from a tip system where everything was included in the price and it made national news.
Right.
And I just don't know if our culture, because, you know, I've been to Europe, you've seen it, you don't tip over there. And
that bothers me, I tip.
And it bothers me too, so I tip because it's just
they
how we kind of grew up.
They love Americans for that reason.
I mean, same thing in the Caribbean. A lot of times if you go to Caribbean islands that are British owned.
Yeah, they don't tip.
They don't tip. And then when Americans come, you know, you also definitely notice the difference in service.
Yeah, they give you the service. And look, I get them adding a tip for crowds over a certain age. This has nothing to do with the tip.
No, I'm
with
you.
This 10%. Is just because you showed up at their place and you're paying with a credit card.
So do you think that the lake restaurants just came together and said, hey, we can make more money and let's all do it together?
I think one probably did it.
Yeah.
And they were like, look, these suckers will keep coming down here and spending like crazy.
And doing it.
And we'll add 10% on. And if you're the owner of the pool bar, you get an extra 10% in your pocket.
Would you be okay with everything, like, let's say, like in Memphis, every place added 10% no matter what, and then you were able to add more on top of that 10%? 10% gratuity that goes to the server.
Yeah, I guess I wouldn't have a problem with that. If we started to impose, like, this is the minimum tip that's going to be happening in every state now, and it's going to be 10%, I'd have no problem with that. I'd tip over that. I see tipping is different from just 10% because they wanted to put it on there.
Right, no.
And it's not going to their worker.
I mean, like when I was on Beale Street, I mean, it was 15% at every, like in the restaurants where you would just, you know, they have the outside where you just get one of those huge drinks and can walk the street.
Yeah.
And it was still that. I was just, that's insane to me.
He's one of my favorite people in the entire world. His name's Braxton Payne. You'll hear him on the Dave Glover Show. You'll hear him sitting in occasionally for me if I'm out of town. As we all know, John Hancock's been out of town, but no worries. He'll be back with us Friday morning at 8:30 right here on the Mighty Mox. You can always watch Hancock and Kelly, the TV show, on Sundays at 8:30 on Fox 2. That's enough of the promos. Go home, watch the rest of the All-Star Game. Have yourselves a wonderful night listening to the greatest radio station on the planet, KMOX.